please rise, please? Deputy Clerk, would you lead us in a salute to our flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our city clerk is off, and our deputy clerk, Susan Duncan, will take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Olson.
Present.
Councilmember Ingram.
Present.
Councilmember Mutchler.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. Okay, Councilperson Hansen has requested an absence. He's on a vacation.
So moved.
Okay. Second. Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, Councilperson Hansen is excused. Before we go into the public comment period, I'd like to, we'll stop for a moment of silence. We've had not a great week in Ferndale. On Friday, the council member that used to occupy the seat that Councilperson Olson sits in, former Councilperson Jim Elliott, passed away.
He was in his seat.
No, he actually sat there.
How come I ran against him?
Well, because your seat was shifted over. Anyway, it doesn't really matter where he's at. His services will be Friday. We wish Patty and his family well, and if you want to attend a service, Patty has extended the invitation to all of you. Over the weekend, we had a terrible situation. A 23-year-old graduate of Ferndale High School was enjoying Father's Day on her grandfather's patio on Gadwah Road, just outside the limits of Ferndale, enjoying Father's Day with her grandfather and her father. Alyssa Smith was 23. You know, I coached her in soccer. Her grandfather's the best friend of my dad, and some senseless people decided that they thought it was okay to shoot a gun across the river, not knowing there was a house there. And so, and now a 23-year-old girl, Ferndale's gone. So I'd like to all take a moment of silence for that. Thank you. So now we'll go to the public comment period. This is the period where people in the audience can come speak to the council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. Anything on our agenda, we do a little different at Ferndale. We're kind of a little more casual. When we go to the agenda items and you want to speak, we'll look to the audience and you just raise your hand and come speak on anything that's on the agenda. But this is for a time to come forward to talk to anything that's not on tonight's agenda, anything you'd like to address the council with. So I have a hand up already, so come forward, please. We'll let ladies go first. Welcome.
Welcome. Good evening. I'm Beth Buckland, 5775 Church Road, Ferndale, Washington. Saddened by the news you just said, that's very unfortunate. But I want to thank each of you for serving, because my schedule's just been crazy, and it's hard to get here tonight for 10 minutes, so I know your commitment is huge, that you come as often as you do, and I really appreciate it. I'm here on behalf of the Ferndale Arts Commission, and I was looking through my past notes, and I see here that our first Arts Commission meeting was May of 2008, but I know as of 2006, I was involved with the arts in Ferndale, and to this day, I'm still on the committee, and two others are still on the Arts Commission that was established in 2008. That's Ellen McEnany and Barbara Ingram. Our biggest accomplishment was the first Ferndale public sculpture, Riverwalk, Monolith, and Markers by Lori Nozick. And I just thought it'd be fun to bring you up to date on what Lori's been doing. Right now, she has moved to Florida, and she is a teaching 3D and sculpture. She's an adjunct professor at the New World School for Arts. Prior to that, she did a walkabout sculpture in Hollywood, Florida. In 2011, two of Lori's drawings were sent to the ambassador's residence in Phnom Penh, Cambodia. I know I didn't pronounce that correctly. But they're on loan at the ambassador's residence. She has exhibited in Italy, Jerusalem, and Israel. And she has published Earth and Ascension in conjunction with her staircase sculpture installation when she spent 2 months in Berlin, Germany. This is her book. I can pass it around. It's written in German and English, and it also shows all her artwork that she has created with mud on tar paper. And then you'll have to go online. My computer wasn't working to print pictures of all of her sculptures. In 2010, she did a sculpture in the Boston Harbor called, it was commissioned by the Boston Harbor Shipyard. And then she also did a site-specific architectural sculpture made of salt at Fort Zachary Taylor State Park in Key West, Florida. I just thought it was interesting, and I'm pleased that Ferndale has a sculpture by such a renowned artist, and I would like to ask your support to try to get more public art in Ferndale. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, I believe you had your hand up.
My name is John Robinson, which by pure coincidence was the same last name as both my mother and father. I live at Malloy House, which happens to be on Malloy, 6072, as I remember, and hopefully I do because I'll be on my way back this evening. And I'm here to talk about something that I know that I've talked with the mayor about, and I'm not sure who else I forgot, but I've talked to several people. I walk every day for exercise, and even though I talked to my doctor about that, and I said, he asked me about my exercise program, and I said, well, one of my exercises is jumping to conclusions, and he didn't seem to be impressed. And I said, well, I stretch credulity, and he still didn't seem to be impressed. And I said, you know, every now and then, I have an exercise in futility, but still not impressed. So I decided maybe I'd start walking, and I do that, but I find that I'm allergic to the idea of either rigor mortis or tire prints on my forehead, especially if they're studded tires. It's just not a good look at all. It's hard to get off and, you know, ruins your day, especially rigor mortis. It's really hard to walk when you're cold and stiff. Now, what's that got to do with you guys? Well, oh, I forgot to tell you. Now, you have to picture Hovander and May, okay? We'll start off there, Hovander and May. I should be in the Guinness World Book of Records and or Ripley's Believe It or Not, because I don't know how many times I've gotten there and been run over by a train. It's getting to be a habit now. You think I'd learn after a while. But the point is there that when I walk there, I feel like I need to buy additional insurance every time before I try to walk across that intersection. It's very dangerous. If you're walking, picture with me now, you're heading east. And as you're heading east, the traffic from on Main Street heading east cannot see you as you go to the crosswalk to cross there to head east underneath the bridge there, because there's a wall there and it's a blind corner. And even though the speed limit is 25 seems like 55 when you're standing in that crosswalk and you got a car or truck aiming at you. Then as you come back the other direction, it's no better because you have a blind curve coming from Hovander onto Main heading east. That also is blind, and I've almost been hit a time. I've learned to just stop, and I'll wave the traffic on because I have much more to lose than they do. So I'll just say, you go first. And then, you know, if they say I go, I stand there, I'm insistent. No, you go first because you're much bigger than I am. Now, and the problem is when you come west now, you also have people turning left from Main Street onto Hovander, and they're not looking at you. They're not looking at pedestrians. They're looking at oncoming traffic, which is understandable. It's just so, you know, sometimes you don't have a break very often in the traffic flow. So it only makes sense that they're not looking at you. So I try to make it a point now, look at them, see if they're looking at me. But typically I'll just wave them on. Go ahead and make your turn because I'm retired. I have time. And the issue here is, to me, it seems like there's some common sense, rather inexpensive things that can be done right away. Obviously, ideally, I think the best thing to do would be to put a don't know, pressure sensitive or one of those devices that pick up traffic as they come on, so that with a traffic light, that'd be ideal. But until then, simple pedestrian signs. There's no signs now, of which I'm aware at least, anywhere near that intersection. And there should be east, west on both, well, east and as you're coming west, left turn in the middle there, and as you're coming from Ovander, there should be pedestrians, a picture of pedestrians walking. Just as a reminder. And another common sense thing to me would be, because at one time I was a police officer, I'm not saying it was a long time ago, but I forgot what the speed limit was on those stage wagons, the stage coaches we had go through our town. Put a cruiser, and on a break, you know, having lunch break or making a cell phone call or you know, cutting their fingernails or doing something that they have downtime or waiting for a call or something, have them park around the curb there behind that daycare center and remind people just by their presence that, hey, you need to be careful going around this corner. You don't even have to write tickets. Just sit there. And that would include even the civilian people that we have. Have them just sit there with a MARC unit. You know, you need to do it consistently so people get the idea that when we come around the curb, there may be a unit there of some kind, and that will help slow them down. So the next thing is related to this, and this is now take your focus from there over to Higgins and picture the east part of that lot as you're going out the east side. There is a crosswalk that goes across that portion of that drive in front of Higgins that leads from a sidewalk to an open field. And that's wonderful. But what do you do if you want to actually get to the sidewalk on the other side of the street without walking through, you know, Mount Vernon or some other place? There's no crosswalk. So, you know, again, I'm allergic to tires on my forehead. I want every advantage I can get as a pedestrian, which would include a crosswalk, so at least they have to aim at me on purpose if I'm in the crosswalk. So I don't know how much money a crosswalk would cost, but I wouldn't think it'd be that much. The point being, how about a crosswalk from the Higgins across the street to the sidewalk where the bus stop is on the other side by the Shell station? To me, that seems like inexpensive and rather common sense kinds of things that will help me avoid rigor mortis. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Speaking on the jail, because we'll have that on a different agenda. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you for clarifying, because I was going to ask. I'm Joy Gilfillan. I'm a Whatcom County resident from 1225 East Sunset Drive in Bellingham. I had a business out here for about 8 months, but I am speaking on the subject of the Visionary Economy Conference, the Vibrant Futures Conferences that we're going to do. I was here at the public meeting with the mayors a month or two ago, and I asked if the mayors of the communities would be interested in having a conversation about economic development that is outside of the standard. And they indicated a yes. So I'm here to invite you all, and I'll pass these invitations around. I'm inviting you to come on July 2nd, October 2nd, and March 4th of next year. We're going to do three conferences. In between, we're going to have project teams and community development processes to be able to pull up from the public all new and completely different solutions to economic development than what are traditionally thought about. Most people look at jobs. Most people look at the old methods of manufacturing or old methods of whatever. And the fact of the matter is, right now in this nation, we are in a societal depression. We are in economic downturns that are incredible. And I understand that in Ferndale, for example, some of your 50% of your elementary school's kids or whatever are on school lunch menus. That's a problem for the hard luck generation, and the only way out is not trying to just get big business. It's about actually empowering people who are on the lower end of the spectrum, whether they are coming out of jail or people who are the middle class who have been bucked out of the system. I know a lot of middle class people who used to be in business who are right now standing in food bank lines themselves trying to figure out how to do business. So this conference is all about really thinking outside the box, working from the realm of all possibility thinking, working from the realm of peak performance coaching and business development, and looking for new business models that actually can stimulate growth from the grassroots up. And this is not to be confused with just, you know, green business or anything else. I'm a businesswoman. I've been in business since I was 8 years old. I started out selling manure to city people from the farm. And so I am all about small business and free enterprise. And so that's what this is about. I invite you to come. And if your organization, I don't know how you get resolutions on a board to say if you guys could, you know, endorse it just as a goodwill measure, I'd certainly welcome that. But thank you very much for the opportunity.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Yeah, Joy, thanks for coming tonight. I noticed that the time on July 2nd is 9 to 8, long day.
Yes.
Is it broken up? Can you come to part of it and that kind of stuff?
I plan
to attend it one way or another.
The whole point of the way that I do business, because I've been a business coach for a long time, what I do is I do three segments in the day, and we'll teach actually a skills training, a snookeries training at the first section, which is how do you identify fear-mongering and manipulation as opposed to good common sense business critical thinking. The second segment will all be about intentional change thinking, which is how do you notice the systems, structures, and businesses that are disappearing in your market, and how do you find what's evolving? It's sort of like working with a compost heap, you know, to find out how do you actually grow new business. And the third section will be about future think. And so each one of them is a completely different skill set. If you can come from one to the other, they will accumulate, and you'll walk away with $1 million education. But if you can't come to whatever you can, the same thing will happen in the fall and in the spring, but each section will build on the next one. So it's a whole community movement. It's very different than anything you've probably ever attended before.
Do you have group discounts for...
I'll do whatever it takes. I want people there.
Yeah.
Okay, and if people cannot afford to pay, I want them to come anyway, because it is not about making money. It's about producing revenue and businesses that can make money. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Enjoy. You can talk on completely different subjects on the other agenda, too. So
thank you.
Speak more than once. Okay, anyone else for the open comment period? Back here? Okay, I'll go her and then you. Speaking on items that are not on tonight's agenda. Welcome.
Thank you.
Don't break the chairs.
Charlene French, 5044 La Bounty Road.
I didn't hear your name. I'm sorry.
Charlene French. And today was a beautiful day. We wanted to open up our doors, and we couldn't. My husband, I was doing bills. Bob was reading the paper. He got up, and he went, oh. I said, what's wrong? It stinks. The asphalt plant still smells. We called Northwest Air Pollution. They did come out. They did get fined today because they smelled it on the neighbors. And it's really frustrating. Even Scott said it's hard to get up here with the bridge out and even getting back and forth in Mount Vernon. But something needs to be done. It's summertime, and we had to close up our windows and doors today. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. And they were fined?
Yeah.
There was some citation. Okay, and then here, sir. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Robert Hakeem. My address is 2308 Douglas Road, apartment 305. I'd like to hold up my hands for the families of the ones lost this week. And what I'd like to speak about is, in light of the ongoing Lummi Nation relations we're having, I'd like to quote from the Constitution of the United States. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution of the United States vests the federal government with the authority to engage in relations with the tribes, and thereby firmly places tribes in the constitutional family of our nation. And then I'd like to talk about a precedent they had. When the governmental authority of tribes was first challenged in 1830s, Chief Justice John Marshall articulated the fundamental principle that has guided the evolution of federal Indian law to the present. Tribes possess a nationhood status and retain inherent powers of self-government. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Council.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else from the audience for the open comment period? We're doing good tonight. Good percentage. Okay, so we'll move on in the agenda. Next up is the consent agenda. I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second. Moved and seconded by Councilperson Ingram. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Thank you. Okay, capital project updates, and we welcome again Katie Ratter to the council chambers.
Good
Good evening, Council. So I'll start by talking about Vista first. This is the first week of real construction on both Vista and Thornton, so that's pretty exciting. If you've noticed or driven around town, the contractors secured a laydown yard on 4th Avenue, and they've started installing traffic control devices, signage, no parking signs on Vista, that sort of thing. So that's pretty busy while we look over all their submittals and view the materials that they bring on site before they get going. So we did actually have a community meeting last week on Wednesday. It was pretty well attended. And so we were able to talk basically one-on-one with the adjacent property owners, business owners, about the schedule. There were two members from the construction company, ICI, that were able to attend and explain more about their construction schedule and talk to folks, because I know there's some real concerns out there. So that was, I think that was well attended, and there was some good information that went both directions, so we were able to address some things there. We have published the road closure to occur sometime this week on Vista, starting between 3rd and 4th. That may be subject to a little bit of change. We have our weekly construction meetings on Tuesday, which is not very timely for me to give an update tonight, but we'll know more tomorrow. So that might get pushed back to next week, but we'll keep you posted on that. So that's all I had for Vista.
Any questions on that project? Councilperson Watson?
Are you doing Twitter or the Facebook? I mean, how are we going to get it out? So is Sam going to tweet something tomorrow when you finally know what part of Vista's going
to
close?
Yeah, usually what we do is I run downstairs to Sam in a panic, and he helps me out with a press release, and then we post it to our website, which is new and very cool, mm-hmm. by the way, if you haven't seen that yet. We post it to Facebook and then Twitter, and with the press release, and we get it out to the Record Journal and Bellingham Herald, and they've been very good in helping us spread the word to the community. So. Okay.
It'll probably, because the press is here, probably the front page lead article on both papers.
Well, I mean, it's definitely
a giant picture.
Yes, above the fold for sure, because it's really important.
No pressure.
That's right.
Moving along.
You can pay for an ad.
No more questions on Vista? All right. So Thornton, same thing. The contractors on site today, they started installing signage and erosion control measures. Their first order of business when, you know, real construction starts will be to shut the road on Wednesday once the kids are safely out of school and tear off the road, start installing utilities. So that's well underway. During the course of construction, both on Vista and Thornton, we've been talking with WTA and the other agencies to let them know that there will be road closures and impacts. So WTA has actually adjusted their routes to go down Shannon instead of Vista, and they've set up a temporary stop there in front of City Hall, where we have the stops that are, you know, build it and they will come kind of thing, and they're using that temporarily. So yeah, we're on schedule with that. Like I said, the road closure will start on the 19th, and we'll start with the underground construction. So, any questions about that? All right. Church Road, the last report that I gave a month ago was on Church, was surrounding our working with the overhead utility companies to relocate their poles. That work is still underway. They're doing design. They're taking a look at to see what kind of utilities they have there, what kind of underground crossings, seeing where there might be conflicts where the city wants to install storm. So that's moving forward as well, just not quite as visible.
Questions on that project? Councilperson Watson?
Was that you? That wasn't the city today then that had part of Church closed. That was someone doing something else?
Oh, I wasn't. I'll say no because I wasn't aware that
okay.
they were doing
that. That was a contractor building that house.
Was that what that was? Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, I don't know anything about that.
Just to inform the council, the Public Works Trust Fund was eliminated during the last legislative session that ended with nothing happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it wasn't eliminated, but nothing happened. It is on the agenda for this session again. I wrote a letter to Senator Erickson, urging him not to eliminate the Public Works Trust Fund. We shall see.
So the money we get for 2013 won't go away, just for the next budget? Because aren't we getting money from them?
No, it'd be projects for 2014.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Please type.
Last thing to report on is Main Street. If you've driven down Main Street, it's kind of a slalom course with some cones and guys adjusting manholes there. So I stopped in a couple times today, and they've gotten those all jackhammered out, set to the proper grade, and they'll be coming in tomorrow to pave. So
is it going to rain?
No.
Okay.
Just jinxed myself. So the weather's supposed to be decent. So they plan on paving that back and then opening the road up. Overnight, traffic will be shifted from approximately between Shannon and Hendrickson, because you don't want traffic going over that wet, because they use concrete to raise the lid. So make sure that that sets.
Any questions on that one, Councilperson Zimmerman?
A slightly different one. It's a concrete street paving.
Okay. Well, that one, boy, there will be lots of people that drive that road will be thankful to lower those manholes. So thank you again. Okay, your question?
There's a contractor, as you're coming down Shannon, just as you're taking those curbs, he's went ahead and had to remove some of our new Shannon Street.
Mm-hmm.
What's the time frame for the equipment? This is about a 2-inch drop. It's pretty...
You know, that's a private that's a private job, and so I'm not sure what the timing is, and I don't know if Janice does.
I'm not sure what their schedule is for paving it.
Yeah, so we can definitely check and then let you know. Sorry,
it'd be nicer than the last month.
Yeah, I'll write that down. That's all I had.
Okay, might as well stay there, because are you going to probably talk about the, or is it?
No, that's
you? Okay. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
Okay, this is the public hearing on the six-year transportation improvement program, the six-year TIP. We'll go to our public works director, Janice Marliga. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Right. Good evening, council. Well, each year we have to go through and review and update and adopt a new six-year transportation improvement program. So this year is the 2014 through 2019. And we accomplished this by reviewing the current plan in our Public Works and Utilities Committee. We go through it probably 2-4 times. Then we have an open house to gather public comment, feedback, and then we bring it before the council, and then this is our public hearing to get any additional final public comments. On our board, the list of our projects that we have on our current plan. We have our six-year TIP form that has been completed, and this is the form that the council would actually adopt. There's no other changes on this except for what this is the same form that was presented at the last committee meeting. So we have dollar amounts and dates on this one. Some of the changes that we made this year is we could take Thornton Road off the list because the work is currently underway right now. And then we were able to move Church Road up, so that's our number one project. So we have design, permitting, right-of-way, and our stormwater pond built. So we've got that project shovel-ready, and then we'll just be seeking grant funds. We'll be submitting for both state and federal. So we're going to be working pretty hard on that between now and the end of the year. And then the other project, we moved up Barrett Road because we're hoping that we might be able to get some state pavement preservation funds for that because that road there is starting to fall apart a little bit. And if we can get in there and take care of it now, then it'll cost a lot less. So I think with that, unless there's any questions, we can go ahead and open up the public hearing.
Any questions of staff before we go to the public for the public hearing portion? Councilperson Zimmerman?
I know number six is the sidewalk.
Yes.
$100,000 for sidewalk plan, which I'm great. That's great
well,
to
we,
see.
We put that program in there, but there's no funding that's actually tied to it.
So is it just kind of a placeholder? It's a good idea. So you don't have a job breakdown of any
No, but any grant opportunities that come up, then we apply for them.
Good.
So we have that placeholder. Yeah.
Okay, any more questions from council to staff? Okay. Yes.
Okay.
So this is a public hearing, and even though we have an abbreviated speech for public hearings, even if no one is even raising their hand to speak, we still have to read it. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, or just I'll go to the audience and anyone wants their hands up, audience members who have signed up prior to the beginning of your meeting will be called the first to speak at the public hearing. If you're unable to sign up before the meeting, you'll be given an opportunity to address the council once you've got through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. I don't see anyone signed up. Each speaker should state his or her name and address for the record and be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals support the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group. So anyone in the audience would like to come forward and speak about the 6-year transportation improvement program? Anyone? Okay. I'm going to open and close the hearing at 6:30.54. How's that? Automatic open and close. Council, direction from you. Councilperson Goodrich.
Make a motion to accept the 6-year transportation TIP or Agenda Bill 13-06-006.
Second.
Seconded by Councilperson Watson. All in favor? Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Good job, Council.
Thank you, Janice.
Okay, next up is Ordinance FMC 10.08. Community Development Director Burnett will explain this ordinance.
Committee looked at this, Planning and Land Use Committee, what staff is proposing, Public Works, Police Department, and Community Development, is adopting an ordinance wherein you would close off parking on the west side of Portal Way, approximately from the Pacific Pride Station down to the northbound on-ramps.
So for the public, so they understand, we've got some complaints there in terms of it seems to be a long-term parking lot for semis. We've had numerous complaints. It kind of destroys the sight lines there. Not a good as, you know, you're heading into the freeway. At times, if everyone has ever come home that way, people going right, people going left, that's a busy freeway on and off ramp, but we don't need vision restricted there because it's a dangerous situation, not good for the businesses there. So, council questions or discussion? I had Councilor Zimmerman and then Councilor Watson.
Yuri, I mentioned this in committee, is there a place, if we had our druthers that, you know, if some trucker said, gosh, I'm really tired rather than driving, where do I park? What would we say to them?
Pacific Pride or Pilot.
Yeah, there are private places where they can go to, but on the public
rest
streets.
Okay. Or you could refer them to Councilperson Zimmerman, who would talk to his friend who owns the lot that was going to be Boundary Bay.
That's right.
Throw it right back at you.
Don't drink and drive. Just drink.
Councilperson Watson.
Do you have any idea how much it's going to cost for the extra signage and...
I know that Bo said it was going to be approximately 3 signs.
Price about, yeah, 100 to 150 a sign.
Minimal, pretty much. Okay.
Yeah. Installed. Councilperson Olson? Didn't Sam say there were a plethora of signs up there? A lot of signs. He didn't know specifically if this sign was there.
Oh, but I will assume someone will look for them, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions from staff? Okay, council action.
Go ahead. I move to approve Agenda Bill 13-06-007.
Second. Okay. Moved by Councilperson Watson, seconded by Councilperson Olson. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
Thank you, council.
Okay, it's a nice sunny evening. They want to get
now. How are we going to get the semis to stop parking up on Thornton by our neighborhood?
Well, there were two there.
Yeah, there's two there almost every night, and sometimes four.
The guy lives there. He lives in the neighborhood.
He parks out there and then walks back down to his house.
You would urge your neighbors to fill out a action request form with specifics.
Hopefully, the construction on Thornton will prevent him from doing that temporarily, at least.
Okay, the next up is discussion on the Whatcom County Jail. This was brought forward by Councilperson Zimmerman, so we didn't really have anything for staff or nothing is presented, so I'm going to turn this discussion over to Councilperson Zimmerman. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's very possibly that this could be the largest decision that's on people's mind this year for the election. They want to know where we stand, whether we support it, how, what's going on, and there's just so many ramifications with this decision. And as the mayor likes to say, we're up here to make the tough decisions. And I've had some people ask me, well, why aren't you speaking up for us? And so I think as a process that we should not just automatically say, hey, we're all for it, and say an automatic resolution like we have to, but the idea that there's some other options available and foster those types of conversations. And as going as so far as putting it as a resolution on the ballot, just as a non-binding resolution to put it on the ballot to say, Ferndale, how do you feel about this? Get that discussion going.
So specifically, you're asking that this council put,
I said,
a voted resolution on the upcoming ballot to say what?
Well, I mean, the conversation tonight starts. Conversation of is this inevitable? Is this the best site? Have they been, you know, asking all the questions that we need to ask as a citizen, as a city? Are the people who that we represent ask us? I don't know if the guess is, well, what's this all about? How's it done? How come it's us? How come we're the only site? You know, all these questions, but the idea of it has a lot of social impacts and ramifications. And I'm saying it could go as far as putting it on the ballot just to see how people feel about the whole thing.
I'll go to Councilperson. Do you want?
Go ahead and let you. I think you're
okay,
right.
Okay, so Community Development Director first, then Councilperson Watson.
I was just going to say for process, it sounds like what Councilmember Zimmerman is talking about is, and what staff would be looking for direction from the council, is for the council tonight to determine whether or not you wish staff to bring something back to you for your first meeting in July. So no action, regardless of any discussion that would take place tonight, no action would take place tonight. It would merely be directing staff to prepare something for you for your meeting in July, where you would then have a vote.
I don't think that's what Councilperson Zimmerman has asked.
No?
He's asked to have a council discussion on an issue. One council member has given an opinion on where he thinks the discussion goes to have staff spend time on that. It's going to take a little more than one council person asking staff to do that.
Absolutely.
Now, I guess the question would be, our finance director could come in estimation, there's a cost to put a ballot on election. It would be cheaper than the last one, but the library ballot issue was $40,000. So
I don't know what the number would be for November. It's a big number for the general fund, and there's no money in the general fund. I'm just saying something extra like that. You've got somewhere else.
I believe our clerk had stated for this election, because you'd be tagging on a larger election, he thought it'd be as low as under 20. But there's 20,000. And I'll let Councilperson Zimmerman address this. That would be $20,000 for a vote that does what?
Advise us on what avenue to take. But again, that would be the extreme that it would go to. I think as we did here, as you led us to be on the coal train or the coal, so even though that was outside of our jurisdiction, this is more germane because it is in our city. It does have a future impact, and once this is all done, it's done. We're going to be living with it for a long time, and so there's a lot of issues that I think that should be brought up, especially in an election year where people are asking, where do you stand on this?
So your election issue would say, we the voters of Ferndale want a jail or don't want a jail.
Sure. And yeah, and we can just do a roll call vote, and that would just give the citizens an idea on who to. Who's
with 41? Us? Roll call in with us. You said roll call votes.
Yes. Where we stand on it, and then that will tell.
So let's try to clarify it. Is you're asking the council to vote on what specifically tonight?
Just discussion.
nothing to vote on tonight.
Okay. I got confused.
There was no action plan tonight, was there?
No.
You would need to direct staff, the majority would need to direct staff as to whether or not you want us to prepare anything.
Finance director?
It's really not finance, but you already helped me out. Isn't that area zoned for essential public facility? We cannot as a city say there be no jail in Ferndale because it's zoned. And just because we may not like it, we can't exclude them, right?
That would be illegal for the city to preclude the siting of a correctional facility, an essential public facility. The city could identify, as we have through our scoping comments on the SEIS, what issues we want to have addressed and possible mitigation measures could come out of it. But the city cannot simply say no jail in Ferndale without the probable expectation of a very winnable lawsuit for the county.
Mm-hmm. But the council, I guess, I mean, to defend Councilor Zimmerman, the council could decide to make any kind of vote they wanted, whether they like something or not. They might vote, we don't like community development directors with purple shirts. That would be rare.
That would be rare, though.
Because we actually love him in his purple shirt.
Okay, so council discussion. I have Councilperson Watson, and then Councilperson Mutchler, and then Councilperson Goodrich.
I think my problem with it is, first of all, we can't stop them from building it, so I don't want to ask people, do you want it, knowing that there's nothing that we can do to stop it. And I think there's people seem confused. They think we're not doing anything about it. We're just going to accept it, which isn't true. I mean, we've been working with the environmental impact statement, making our comments, and I didn't make any personal comments to the scoping because I felt Mr. Burnett covered everything that I was concerned about. So I do feel like we're pushing back as much as we can push back. I don't know that we need a resolution. I definitely don't want to do an advisory vote. I mean, I don't see any reason to do an advisory vote. What do people say? No, they don't want it. I mean, spend all that money to have people say no, and then nothing would happen. So I don't know. I guess if you want to do a resolution, I guess we could talk about it. I kind of feel like county council knows what our concerns are based on our statements from the environmental impact statement. I don't know that I personally haven't talked to anyone on county council about it, because I'm waiting for the draft environmental impact statement to see what they accepted of our comments.
Councilperson Mutchler?
And the last thing that Councilmember Watson said is very important. We don't have the EIS yet. There isn't a person on the planet that can make a decision about the jail until we see the EIS.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, hypothetically, there could be a time when we've all got the EIS in front of us, including 12,000 citizens of Ferndale, and then you could say you can take an intelligent vote. But nobody can do that. So there's really nothing to do at several levels. One of them is nobody has the EIS yet. And
no.
Also, having attended the last Planning Commission meeting, Planning Commission is aggressively and seriously taken up the building standards and things like that. And so the city has taken a very proactive and aggressive approach to this. And so I think some very positive things are happening.
Before I go to Councilperson Goodrich, because some members in the audience, it's always good to educate the public. Because when this process started, I know I was enlightened because I'd never heard the term essential public facilities. So can you, people that haven't been on that, kind of do a little review on essential public facilities and what we can or can't say?
Sure. They're well described because they are things such as hospitals, jails, so-called halfway houses. Sometimes you might even consider an airport as a possible one. A transfer station or a garbage waste facility is another one. These are things that we all depend on for everyday living, or hopefully you never need to depend on things such as a jail or a hospital or things like that. But they are an essential part of society. They're also relatively large, often relatively impactful, and so they are not things that people want to have in their backyards. Fortunately or unfortunately, they're also things that we need to have in relatively close proximity to us so that they can function well. So the state of Washington recognized that no one wants them nearby, but everyone needs them close by. So they've adopted through the RCW, Revised Code of Washington, something that says that all jurisdictions must have procedures in place to accept essential public facilities, and no jurisdictions can preclude the siting of those facilities. What they do acknowledge, though, is that jurisdictions can identify reasonable standards for their placement, location, and design. So as the finance director said, the city of Ferndale has identified for correctional facilities like a jail, east of the Nooksack River in the manufacturing zone south of Smith Road are the only places where those could be located. Our current code right now, as Councilmember Mutchler pointed out, doesn't talk too much about the design. It does talk about the setbacks for those. But so the Planning Commission right now, at the direction of Council, is looking at some of those other requirements, setbacks, design, whether there needs to be a fiscal impact statement done, things such as that. That will, by the way, the zoning changes will require an open record public hearing at Planning Commission, another one at Council, and then if there is ultimately a proposal, there would be an open record public hearing before the Ferndale hearing examiner. He's not an elected official. He's an impartial third party whose job it is to look at the record, look at the comments, and look at the code, and then make a decision. So it will not be the Ferndale City Council that decides to approve or deny it based on our current code.
And what is that date scheduled to be?
Well, the county would like to move relatively rapidly on this, which is why we are working hard on it. We anticipate that the Planning Commission is going to hold their open record public hearing on July the 30th, which will give you the opportunity as soon as your second meeting in August to have your own hearing on it, or to take longer if you feel that it needs to be longer. The county understands that, and we will be able to get that done before any land acquisition is made.
Great. Councilperson Goodrich?
My concern when I saw this on the agenda is that what message would we be sending as a council to the Planning Commission if we voted a resolution for or against? We even sent the Planning Commission to give them the task to look at zoning. And if we came out and said we are in favor of a jail, then that basically tells the Planning Commission change the zoning if you want to get it through the council. If we came out with a resolution that says, no, we don't want a jail, then we're basically telling the Planning Commission, don't make any changes to the existing code, and why bother putting forth the effort. So I think it's very premature for us as a council, in light of what the Planning Commission is doing based off of our direction as a council, and the fact that the EIS is still out there, that, yes, I know there's some citizens that want us to act and act now, and they're on Facebook and they've formed their thing, but I think it's just premature for us as a council to do any action tonight until these other elements all come together.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Well, Councilman Goodrich, would it be similar or dissimilar than the siting of the coal terminal before us putting together a resolution, minus myself, I'll mention again for the record, before the EIS statements on a state level was done?
Yes, I think the main difference is the fact that we are voting on this. If you talk to any of the county council people about the coal thing, they cannot come out and say they're for or against or anything, because it's coming to them and it'll be brought forward to them for a vote. I've asked some county council members about that when we did our resolution, if they were going to do something like that. But because it was outside our jurisdiction where we have no direct input, then we could do the resolution. Whereas this is something that we are going to be voting on as a council. It's going to affect us in our jurisdiction. So that's the difference that I was.
Well, what Yuri just said is that we will not be voting on it because it's all.
We'll be voting on zoning changes, possible zoning changes, and design changes that would affect.
But there's no way that we can make a voting change to deny it. So it's all we can do is to enhance it.
Certainly, in similar to the Gateway Pacific project, you as a council could, you know, vote.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything binding.
Nothing binding.
You can say we we like this or we don't like this.
Exactly.
So you certainly have a right to bring that forward as a council member, and the council can vote how they choose. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, and the vote on the coal, or the port, I should say, in the recitals, the whereas is in our resolution, it assumes a rigorous EIS and studies and says we assume these things will go through and will pass, assuming that we approve of such an economic adventure. I think the similar thing here would be assuming the EIS comes out positive it'd be appropriate to say we support it. But I don't think it's necessary, really. I mean, it's kind of the EIS. I also think for citizens like ourselves, it's the county council we need to talk to and, you know, go to those meetings and speak our mind. As citizens.
Councilperson Olson?
Both of our Robert's Rules guys aren't here, but in order to keep talking about this, don't we have to have a motion and a second in order to have discussion?
Well, it's an agenda item, and so and then we'll go to the audience, see if anyone from the audience wants to speak, and then Councilor Zimmerman would have to make a motion before the council on some kind of action that he would like or not like, and they would need a second, and then it would go to a vote. So I mean, I haven't heard specifically what he would ask or if he's going to ask, but that, yes, it still is appropriate to have a discussion because it's an agenda item. Any further council discussion before we go to the audience?
No.
Seeing none, anyone from the audience would like to come forward? One hand there, hand there. Three. Welcome again.
Thank you. My name is Joy Gilfillan. I'm the president of the Whatcom County Reentry Coalition. My organization and I submitted a fairly extensive comment question to the EIS statement because we were very disturbed with the process as it has gone through the county and as the press releases have been written over the past couple of years. I joined the coalition just as a little tiny bit of perspective on who I am and why I was as concerned as I am and why I have dedicated a significant amount of time the last 3.5 years to studying the statistics, to studying the issue of restorative justice, to studying the issues of the jail industry, the growth rate of the jail industry in our community as compared to state and national trends. State and national trends indicate that arrest rates per 100,000 population have been going down. The recommendations from the Bureau of Justice, the Bureau of Prisons, the Bureau, you know, all these different state and national trends is to reduce incarceration, to increase alternatives, to increase restorative justice choices. And yet in our county, since early 2000s, contrary to the trends prior to that, from 1997 down to 2003 or so, our arrest rates were following state and national trends, and suddenly we see a spike starting in 2007. It's been very disturbing to me to read into and to look at more and more of the statistics and to notice that again, I'm no professional. I am a layman. I am a mom. I am a businesswoman. But I do understand business models. And what I see are disturbing trends in the types of arrests. They're lower on the bottom end of the food chain rather than at the top end. And the sheriff himself indicated in one of his own press releases that 80 to 90% of all the major crime is done with the top 6%, 7%. Of the population. So why are we arresting and increasing the number of people who are coming in at the bottom end? Many of these kids are high school kids. They're college kids. They're people coming in with misdemeanors and small warrants. And the other trend I see is that the length of time that people are spending in our jails is actually accelerating. If, in fact, we have a liability problem in this county with our jail being overcrowded, then why are we extending prison or jail stays? The third disturbing amount is that I see an increase of arrests per 100,000 population. It's directly contraindicated to state and national trends. So one of the things that concerns me about that is that in our EIS process, we tried in the jail or in the jail task force process, we tried to provide statistics. We tried to provide alternatives to the jail task force. To the county, it seems like a lot of our stuff was denied, and so I've gotten a little smarter to go get some statistics. It's taken a long time to get statistics from the county, but we do have them now. And as a result of that, when we also went to the EIS hearing and we saw that the task force, the current proposed proponents of the jail,
promoted a very limited in scope EIS report, which only dealt with the environment of and our impact on the area, when in fact the National Environmental Protection Act specifically states that when there are projects that are not that are outside the scope of the person's, you know, who's going to benefit by getting it done, if there are issues that are of human environmental impact, and I propose to you that as a council I would recommend that you pass a resolution of some sort that says we actually want to delve into and understand this issue because it will have a dramatic commercial, political, social, and legal impact on your city, and it's only your fiduciary responsibility and your fiscal responsibility to pay attention to that. So that's my recommendation.
Questions for this guest? Councilperson Zimmerman, are you have a question for this guest? Or?
Well, one of the issues that seems to come up is all of a sudden we got the county seat with 100,000 population plus. They got a county with all the land, and yet you have Mount Baker High School, you got Meridian High School, you've got Nooksack Valley High School. And why I mention these is because they're all large institutions that are out in the county outside of a rural area, but still they have water and sewer. Is there a question? Is there, do you see in some of your research that there is adequate facilities in Bellingham?
You mean a better place to build it?
Yeah, there's two alternatives that I see that are really viable, and I do not believe they have been adequately addressed. One of them is the actual Division Street property. There's 7 acres there. You could absolutely, in my opinion, depending upon the size that you want to build, you could actually work very adequately on that facility and that land. The intention is to sell it once they move the current work release center off of there. So it makes sense to me that we should be doing an EIS compared to that as an option because it's close to I-5. It meets all the other standards. There is water and sewer. It's already been, you know, it's already been assessed for criminal occupancy, so to speak. The other thing is that the downtown jail, there's land right across the street that could be developed. It actually, there are a lot of physical, legal, and civic business reasons to consider that thing. And if you don't assume that the sheriff's recommendations of 660 to 800 beds is necessary, if you actually go back and we do a third-party review of those statistics, and I mean truly third-party, I'd like to get it out of the county and actually look at whether or not those trends are justified, because I don't see the needs analysis. I saw nothing in the last year and a half of tracking this process to see why we should have that size of facility. I see nothing to justify it. And, again, I'm a layman, but I see nothing. Yes.
Yeah. Councilperson Watson?
I'm curious, have you spoken to county council members or any of the candidates running for county council about this?
I've been speaking to several of them now. I'm not a politician. Mm-hmm. I'm a businesswoman, and it's only been since I saw the EIS statement and the extreme limited scope of that I really got my dander up.
I'm just thinking, and given their comments in the last meeting, I think a lot of the people on council, actually county council, seem to have a lot of the same questions. And so I don't think it's a done deal. I think that, you know, working with county council is probably the best way to do this right now. I mean, we could write a letter as council detailing concerns that weren't covered in the EIS, which is, just for the record, I'd be more comfortable if we just wrote some sort of letter. These are our concerns. But I do think you should just keep working with county council. They're the ones who are going to make the decision. They're going to have to pay for it.
No, you're going to have to pay for it.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to find the money to pay for it because it's gotten quite big at this point.
And I hear that, and I will be substantially going to them. I have presented in front of the county council prior to this with the jail task force, but the sheriff, he's got a 501c3 foundation, Sheriff's Foundation, that is operating that helps him to promote issues that the county council doesn't pass. He's also got his jail now, you know, build a jail now program that is actually funded by some of the vendors. We actually have a very large jail industry organization in this state that is promoting jail industry growth. And if you look at the business plan and the statistics, the jail industry has been growing in Whatcom County. There's actually articles that were written in the Bellingham Herald, I believe, that were talking about the delight of the bail bondsmen and the jail industry for the growth that they're expecting to see because of the growth of our jail. And this was written by the sheriff's office. So I'm very, very disturbed about what we're doing, and I think that as council people, I think the idea of writing a letter or writing something that says we are concerned, we are parents, you know, this is our county. It's not, I mean, you guys are going to have the fallout of it. If this becomes a prison city, I would highly recommend that you all read what happens when a little tiny town becomes a prison city. And, you know, the sheriff's office will say, or Wendy Jones has told me, she said, you know, you need to keep your jail and your prison statistics different. Well, I agree with that. And actually, I agree with it more than she knows, because if you look at prison statistics and we talk about hardened criminals being housed in this 40-acre facility, that's one thing. But you know what? 60 to 70% of those people that are in our local jail are not convicted. They're serving time. They're putting in time for probation. They're putting in time on little tiny violations. They're getting arrested and kept there for, you know, 3 or 4 days. We've got people who are awaiting drug court. They've been sitting in there for 4 months waiting for the prosecutor's office to sign off on it. There's a lot of concern. And I think that we as parents, as council people, we have a responsibility to our children, because our children are going to inherit that. And you guys, as Ferndale Council, have a responsibility to really examine it. Now, I get that I'm talking a few minutes, but the one thing that I want to say is that this is the most uncomfortable subject that I have ever had to study in my entire life. And I've studied some pretty tough stuff. And studying the prison industry and stepping up against the law enforcement, stepping up against the sheriff, it took a lot of courage for us as an organization, because we are completely non-funded. I have spent 3.5 years studying this. It is not easy to stand up here and say, we need to examine what we're doing. But you know what? I'm watching. I used to coach varsity basketball, and I've watched a lot of our young men end up in our prison system, and they were not criminals, and they still are not criminals, yet they have records. That's not okay. That is not okay. I have varsity athletes from Squalicum High School. One of them's dead. He was not a hardened criminal. That's a problem. And we, as a community, need to start looking at some of these subjects that are not pretty. And we need to start looking at, what do we really want? There are alternatives, the restorative justice alternatives. There are dozens of programs that will give you, the taxpayers, a $45 to $75 return on investment for your same tax dollars. You're losing money if it's going into jail. You're making money if it goes into alternatives, if it goes into intervention, if it goes into behavior modification, it goes into trauma therapy. It will help you with veterans. It will help you with your school kids. It will help you everywhere. And we have a responsibility to look at that. And one last thing. One of the stories is that they want to put all these alternatives inside the jail facility. That does not work. Look at your statistics. It is proven to not be nearly as effective if those things are given outside of it. Not only that, we can build an entire alternative industry that is free enterprise, healing arts, alternative therapies, early intervention, early childhood education. One of the guys I know that came out of the jail, he said, educate before incarcerate. I recommend you all take it seriously, pass some resolution that says, let's look into it at least. You know, I don't know that it's a good idea to go to the population. I think that there's better uses of $20,000 perhaps. But I think you guys taking the time to really look would be well worth your while, because it will change your city forever.
Thank you. Mr. French and then Mr. Hakeem, and then anyone else after that?
Are we utilizing our timer? It doesn't appear that way.
Yeah, I'll go back to, okay. So we'll try to go back to 3 minutes. We lost the timer, but I'll watch the clock here. So.
Did her extra time come off mine?
No.
It's all right. I'll defer to her.
I'm off for good behavior.
Robert French, 5044 Labonte Road, Ferndale, Washington. That's a tough act to follow. You're well organized, Joy. There's been some concern. City council members, I've seen comments from them. I'm not nearly as organized as Joy, but the impact of this facility going in our residential neighborhood has us very concerned. It has you as city council members, I'm seeing, very concerned also. Rightfully so. It takes property off the tax rolls. That's going to be a significant cost to Ferndale, plus the improvements to surrounding structure, that, you know, roads, sidewalks, so on and so forth. There needs to be some mitigation, you know, of some sort. There will be a loss. some consideration should also be extended to the existing neighbors. I can see revisions. Jory's put a lot of work into changing the city code. My own personal take on it is that we're softening the present code that's been in there since 2006. We will probably build something without watchtowers. I get that. He's done a good job getting that across. But it's still a facility for incarceration. There are still folks there that do need supervision. They do need sometimes to be held in a jail awaiting their rehabilitation. Setbacks, building heights, things like that are all up for revision. And that the neighborhood looks at that and says it's not going over very well. Set the things back, put some buffers in there, make it more acceptable. I'm speaking as though this is a done deal. It may not be, but a position from the city of Ferndale, it looks like there's being a lot of preparation made for it. In order to preserve at least some of the value, the existing codes concerning neighborhoods will provide some protection. And in order to provide or to retain some of these codes, some of the language that someone worked very hard on back in 2006, 2007, I would like to see them stay there. I think a lot of this would be a win-win for the city of Ferndale. If the facility does go in there, it'll be a tax loss. Surrounding neighborhoods then perhaps can be enhanced. My own neighborhood residential office, perhaps we can attract businesses related to this or other things and recover some of these losses that the city of Ferndale is going to suffer. So that's about all I've got on the thing. It's impactful. I don't want to see it go in my neighborhood, but I do agree that something needs to be done. If it's a rehabilitation facility or if it's an incarceration facility, something in the middle would probably be better.
Great. Thank you. In fact, okay, and then Council, Yuri and I talked today as we found a company that we feel that we can present to him that actually has done a fiscal impact statement on a jail. We did some research ourselves, and Jerry reached out. In fact, you guys have used them before, Burke and Associates, who has actually done financial implications of the jail. So, Councilmember Goodrich?
Don't take this the wrong way, because I'm really kind of curious as a resident in the area. Right now, you're kind of benefiting from the fact that there's nothing on the land, and that land is zone manufacturing. So all kinds of different things could go on that property. How does that affect you? I know as a resident in the area, you're concerned about a jail, but what if it was a Hempler's meat or meat processing company that went, a slaughterhouse that went in there or something that, you know, that was owned? We heard about the asphalt plant earlier tonight that's in that kind of area. I'm kind of torn because it's a manufacturing zoned area, so all kinds of stuff could go on that property, but yet it's because of council actions years ago, we put a residential area right next to a manufacturing area. Can you kind of help me with that or your thoughts?
Is it
just because it's a jail or is it because, you know, would you be up here if it was, you know, some other
jail,
big manufacturing?
Jail, of course, does bring some concerns. The other thing that we've got is the possibility that just about anything could locate there. We already do have just about anything located there. We've got, it isn't Hempler's, but we do have Freeside and Fur. Do they stink? Yes, they do. They've recently gotten control of their seagulls. Outside scraps of meat have been available to rodents and things like that. They have taken care of that fairly well. The asphalt plant is, I think, trying to mitigate some of their smells. No matter what goes in there, if it's the jail, if it's the sheriff's department, no matter what it is, if it's Hempler's goes in there, you're going to get complaints from them too. The situation that we faced when we bought the land, that was county. We didn't move next to a manufacturing zone. The manufacturing zone came out and moved next to us. In my mind, that was spot zoning. The recomp was going to, you know, the garbage burning facility, which has been outlawed, of course, wanted to locate there. The county was putting some restrictions on them. They talked to Ferndale. Ferndale went right out there and zoned in a long, slim strip. I hesitate to call it spot zoning. It makes some people irritated, but that's what happened. I know there's a possibility that just about anything could locate there, but at my wife and I, at our age, we understand that, and I think you folks understand that someday this will be our nest egg, and that's coming pretty close. But whatever goes in there, I think the city of Ferndale needs to and probably will take a look and see, can we fit this in with residential office? Can we make this work without the phones ringing off the hook and people threatening to move out and losing part of the tax base there? So that's where I stand on it. I know that it could be open to just about anything. The Score Jail is being used as an example of being the ideal place. If you Google Earth that thing, it sits in the middle of, what, 80, 90, 100 acres of forest. It doesn't quite fit this one. It's a nice-looking facility from the front. Google Earth the back doesn't look much different than a jail. No watchtowers, but it doesn't look much different.
Councilperson Mitchler?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. French, for being here again. You've correctly noted that you're in a residential office zoning.
Right.
And this is not a pop quiz, but are you aware of the height potential of a building in the residential office?
I am aware of the city saying that, you know, you could be facing some really bad stuff there.
Yeah.
I am aware of that.
I mean, it's zoned to potentially have 70-foot buildings.
And I'm not against taking advantage of that zone, because realistically speaking, I cannot stand up here in front of you folks and say, that's residential area, don't let anything interfere with my house. Yeah. I don't want it to. But realistically speaking, I'm already being interfered with. Can I sell that house to somebody else? Probably not, with the rendering plant, with the garbage facilities, two of them, with the asphalt plant. Those are things that must be disclosed. So the zoning, the nature of my land sitting right there has to change. And this city council is going to be facing other neighbors who are bordering on my land. There's a lot of potential there. I think there's a good chance for a tax base to go up. But we need to keep this area attractive, whether jail goes in or whatever else goes in there, for development across the street at my place and other folks in the surrounding area.
Thank you, Mr. French.
Thank you. Thank you for serving. It's a nice evening, and I know you'd like to be somewhere else. You're doing a good job.
Mr. Hakeem, welcome again.
Robert Hakeem, 2308 Douglas Road. And from what I understand about the site of the jail, it's on some toxic land, and I just wonder if the city council will have a right to stop it if it's not excavated correctly or taken out correctly.
The development director for that response.
If it so happens that there are toxins there, I think that we would be fighting to get in line to do that. I think that the state and the federal government would also be looking at that. And that is part of the environmental impact statement, to fully identify what might be on or near the site and determine the best method of going forward. And I do know we sat down with the county last week, and they are looking at different geotechnical firms that really specialize in that part. So that's a big part of the discussion, that they, as the buyer, are aware of that possibility.
So that's like stuck in stone. That's going to have to be cleaned or to your satisfaction before it's allowed.
Oh, absolutely.
Yours and lots of other people.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay, anyone else from the audience? This is French. Welcome.
I'm Charlene French again.
And I just, you know, I was curious that jails are only supposed to be in the manufacturing zone, yet downtown Bellingham, is that manufacturing? So I don't understand that. For 27 years, I worked for the Ferndale School District. The last 10 years, I was a peer educator. I was in one class one year, day, and there was this young man in class, and we were at study hall. And he wasn't doing anything. He was sleeping. And I says, well, don't you have any work to do? And he goes, no. And I says, well, you need to do something. He says, I don't have to do anything. I'm in school because as long as I'm in school, I don't go to jail. I mean, you know, I walked out of that room crying. Why, you know, we do have a problem. I walked out, and I talked to her later on. I said, What are we going to do? And I said, what are these kids going to do? She says, oh, they're going to end up in jail. I mean, this is kind of scary. And there are some wonderful kids there. I loved most of the kids I worked with. But it just something like that is scary. Anyway, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the audience would like to speak? Okay. Right now... It's to you, Councilperson Zimmerman, okay. In terms of where you would like council to go.
I'd like to move the adoption of a city council resolution whereby we endorse Ferndale as the best site for the Whatcom County Jail.
Can you repeat that?
I move the adoption of a city council resolution whereby we endorse Ferndale as the best site for the Whatcom County Jail.
Do I have a second for that resolution?
I have to think. It's not where I was expecting you to go.
Big girl boys, big girl decisions have to be made quickly.
Hearing none.
Mm-hmm. Hearing none. No action to go forward. I don't see a second. Okay. Moving on the agenda. Interesting discussion. We will continue this. We have another meeting with the council Wednesday?
Yes, sir.
Wednesday. In terms of our concerns, our scoping comments are long and detailed. Certainly they were not received with positive response by some members of the county. Too bad for them. Okay, mayor reports. Mayor has none. Council reports. Councilperson Mutchler and then Goodrich.
A little bit of show and tell. I really think this might be kind of fun. This is my... my biking jacket from Ski to Sea, but what I want you to notice is the racing bib. So whenever you participate in these goofy races, you have to have a bib. These bibs across the country are usually made out of the same materials, Tyvek or Tyvar, stuck in houses. They last 6 billion years in a landfill. But somebody thought of an idea of creating these things, and this is the first one, used at Ski to Sea, of a product that will, what's the word, compostable, I guess it is. The company is called SustainableRacingSupply.com. This is the first race in the world that has used these compostable materials. And that company was started right here in Ferndale, Washington. And the founder of that company is here tonight. I just want to introduce him to the city council, Tim Prost, if you just could flip his hat or something like that. So Ferndale is a place where Tim is also, I think, kind of a friend of Paul Akers and getting a little help from him. And FastCap is moving to Ferndale, so Ferndale may be the entrepreneurial capital of the world someday. There you go.
Well done. Thank you for doing
that. My pleasure.
That was fun. Councilperson Goodrich.
I just wanted to, I got some flyers here. I'll kind of pass them out. Where I work, Spring Creek Retirement and Assisted Living is doing a fundraiser for Whatcom County Alzheimer's Association Thursday night. They're asking, it's from 4 to 6 p.m. There's going to be wine and appetizers and a silent auction and stuff. So if anybody would like to help for the Alzheimer's Foundation, I don't know if anybody else... they're also looking for any donations for the silent auction. You can contact them if you have something that you'd like to donate for that or come and support it and enjoy some really fancy hors d'oeuvres and some nice wine and help out a needy cause.
Okay. Any other council reports? Councilperson Zimmerman?
I went out and took advantage of the invitation to visit the Lummi Tribal Center. Very impressive. I missed the mayor. He was out there earlier.
But one of the, I got a full walk on. I couldn't believe how huge it was. But they have the Lummi court system. They got prosecutors. They have a lot of stuff. And they have, I spent quite a bit of time in the restorative justice department. And it's run by Ralph Jefferson, who's a former chief of police out there. And boy, I got a real earful as far as I think the direction where the county needs to be and what the Lummi tribe is doing to try to shrink the number, because statistically, 16% of all jail inmates are Native Americans at the Whatcom County Jail. 27% are veterans. And yet they are really being progressive, taking the lead and really taking care of their own, taking care of their veterans and their Native Americans through a restorative justice and just a much better program that I think it would be great if we had more people look closely at that. And I wish them nothing but the best of luck on that to help reduce the jail population.
So, and we are continuing negotiations with the Lummi Nation, so we're still progressing forward. The greatest line, it's in their Native American language above the door, but I will translate it for American because it would be great to have it at the entrance to every one of our politically charged chambers. Let no evil enter these doors. So, great line.
There wouldn't be as many people here.
good.
We get out sooner.
Okay, any other council reports? Okay, department reports. Finance director?
Nothing.
Planning director?
Nothing.
Public Works?
Nothing.
Deputy clerk? Nothing. She doesn't miss Sam for a second. Seems like she did a great job.
Sam who?
Sam who?
I got so much.
Police department? Okay, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Moved
by Councilperson Olson, seconded by
Mr. Ingram.
Okay, Councilperson Goodrich. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. We are adjourned.